Chapter 52. Miller. 1, 2, 3. Miller pushed down on the hand terminal, resetting the trigger again. The double doors in front of him had once been one of thousands of quietly automated mechanisms. They had run reliably in their subtle magnetic tracks, maybe for years. Now, something black with a texture of tree bark grew like creepers around their sides, deforming the metal. Past them lay the port corridors, the warehouses, the casino. Everything that had been Eero Station, and was now the vanguard of an invading alien intelligence. But to reach it, Miller had to pry open a stuck door, in less than 5 seconds, while wearing an environment suit. He put the hand terminal down again and reached quickly for the thin crack where the two doors met. 1, 2. The door shifted a centimeter, flakes of black matter sifting down. 3, 4. He grabbed the hand terminal again, resetting the trigger. This shit just wasn't going to work. Miller sat on the ground beside the cart. The Eero's feed whispered and muttered, apparently unaware of the tiny invaders scratching at the station's skin. Miller took a long, deep breath. Door didn't move. He had to get past it. Naomi wasn't going to like this. With his one free hand, Miller loosened the woven metal strap around the bomb until it could rock back and forth a little. Carefully, slowly, he lifted the corner of it. Then, watching the status readouts, he wedged the hand terminal under it, the metal corner digging hard into the touchscreen over the enter button. The trigger stayed green. If the station shook or shifted, he'd still have 5 seconds to get to it. Good enough. Braced with both hands, Miller tugged at the doors. More of the black crust fell away as he levered the doors open far enough to see through. The corridor beyond was nearly round. The dark growth had filled in the corners until the passage looked like a huge, desiccated blood vessel. The only lights were his suit's headlights, and a million tiny luminescent dots that swirled in the air like blue fireflies. When the Eero's feed pulsed, growing momentarily louder, the fireflies dimmed, and then returned. The environment suit reported breathable air with higher-than-expected concentrations of argon, ozone, and benzene. One of the luminescent dots floated past him, swirling on currents he couldn't feel. Miller ignored it, pushing at the doors, widening the gap centimeter by centimeter. He could put in an arm to feel the crust. It seemed solid enough to support the cart. That was a godsend. If it had been thigh-high alien mud, he would have had to find some other way to carry the bomb. It was going to be bad enough hauling the cart up to the rounded surface. No rest for the wicked, Julie Mao said in his mind. No peace for the good. He went back to work. By the time he'd shoved the doors wide enough to get through, he was sweating. His arms and back ached. The dark crust had started growing down the corridor, tendrils shooting out toward the airlock, keeping to the edges, where walls met floor or ceiling. The blue glow had colonized the air. Eros was heading out the corridor as quickly as he was heading in. Faster, maybe. Miller hauled the cart up with both hands, watching the hand terminal closely. The bomb rocked, but not so much it lost its grip on the trigger. Once he was safely in the corridor, he took the terminal back. 1, 2. The heavy bomb casing had carved a little divot in the touchpad, but it still worked. Miller took the cart handle and leaned forward, the uneven, organic surface beneath him translated into the rough tug and flutter of the cart's vibration. He'd died here once. He'd been poisoned, shot. These halls, or ones much like them, had been his battleground, his and Holden's. They were unrecognizable now. He passed through a wide, nearly empty space. The crust had thinned here, the metal walls of the warehouse showing through in places. One LED still glowed in the ceiling, the cool, white light spilling onto the darkness. The path led him to the casino level, the architecture of commerce still bringing visitors to the same spot. The alien bark was nearly gone, but the space had been transformed. Pachinko machines stood in their rows, half-melted or exploded, or, like a few, still glittering and asking for the financial information that would unlock the gaudy lights and festive celebratory sound effects. The card tables were still visible under mushroom caps of clear, glutinous gel. Lining the walls and cathedral-high ceilings, black ribs rippled with hair-like threads that glowed at the tips without offering any illumination. Something screamed, the sound muffled by Miller's suit. The broadcast feed of the station sounded louder and richer now that he was under its skin. He had the sudden transporting memory of being a child and watching a video feed of a boy who'd been swallowed by a monstrous whale. Something gray and the size of Miller's two fists together flew by almost too fast to see. It hadn't been a bird. Something scuttled behind an overturned vending machine. He realized what was missing. There had been 1.5 million people on Eros, and a large percentage of them had been here, on the casino level, when their own personal apocalypse came. But there were no bodies. Or no, that wasn't true. The black crust, the millions of dark rills above him with their soft oceanic glow, those were the corpses of Eros, recreated. Human flesh, remade. A suit alarm told him he was starting to hyperventilate. Darkness started to creep in at the edge of his vision. Miller sank to his knees. "Don't pass out, you son of a bitch," he told himself. "Don't pass out, or if you do, at least land so your weight's on the damn trigger." Julie put her hand on his. He could almost feel it, and it steadied him. She was right. They were only bodies. Just dead people. Victims. Just another slab of recycled meat, same as every unlicensed whore he'd seen stabbed to death in the cheap hotels on Ceres. Same as all the suicides who'd thrown themselves out of airlocks. Okay, the protomolecule had mutilated the flesh in weird ways. Didn't change what it was. Didn't change what he was. "When you're a cop," he told Julie, repeating something he'd told every rookie he'd been partnered with in his career, "you don't have the luxury of feeling things. You have to do the job." "So do the job," she said gently. He nodded. He stood. "Do the job." As if in response, the sound in his suit changed. The Eros feed fluting up through 100 different frequencies before exploding in a harsh flood of what he thought was Hindi. Human voices. "Till human voices wake us," he thought, without quite being able to recall where the phrase came from. Somewhere in the station, there was going to be something. A control mechanism, or a power supply, or whatever the protomolecule was using instead of an engine. He didn't know what it would look like, or how it would be defended. He didn't have any idea how it worked, apart from the assumption that if he blew it up, it wouldn't keep going very well. "So we go back," he told Julie. "We go back to what we do know." The thing that was growing inside Eros, using the stone skin of the asteroid as its own unarticulated exoskeleton, hadn't cut off the ports. It hadn't moved the interior walls or recreated the chambers and passages of the casino level. So the station's layout should be pretty near what it had always been. Okay. Whatever it used to drive the station through space, it was using a shitload of energy. Okay. So, find the hotspot. With his free hand, he checked the environment suit. Ambient temperature was 27 degrees. Hot, but far from unbearable. He walked briskly back toward the port corridor. The temperature dropped by less than 0.1 degrees, but it did drop. All right, then. He could go to each of the corridors, find which one was hottest, and follow it. When he found a place in the station that was, say, 3 or 4 degrees hotter than the rest, that would be the place. He'd roll the cart up beside it, let up his thumb, and count to 5. No problem. When he got back to the cart, something golden with the soft look of heather was growing around the wheels. Miller scraped it off as best he could, but one of the wheels had still developed a squeak. Nothing to be done about that. With one hand hauling the cart and the other mashing down on his hand terminal's dead man switch, Miller headed up, deeper into the station. "She's mine," mindless Eero said. It had been stuck on the phrase for the better part of an hour. "She's mine. She's mine."
"Fine," Miller muttered. "You can have her."
His shoulder ached. The squeak in the cart's wheel had grown worse, the whine of it cutting through the souls of the damned madness of the Eero's feed. His thumb was starting to tingle from the constant, relentless pressure of not annihilating himself quite yet. With each level he rose, the spin gravity grew lighter, and the Coriolis a little more noticeable. It wasn't quite the same as on Ceres, but it was close, and felt like coming home. He found himself looking forward to when the job was done. He imagined himself back in his hole, a 6-pack of beer, some music on the speakers that had an actual composer instead of the wild, empty-minded glossolalia of the dead station. Maybe some light jazz. Whoever thought the idea of light jazz would be appealing? "Catch me if you can, cocksuckers," Eero said. "I am gone and gone and gone, gone and gone and gone." The inner levels of the station were both familiar and stranger. Away from the mass grave of the casino level, more of Eros's old life showed through. Tube stops still glowed, announcing line errors and counseling patients. Air recyclers hummed. The floors were relatively clean and clear. The sense of near-normalcy made the changes stand out eerily. Dark fronds coated the walls with swirling nautilus patterns. Flakes of the stuff drifted down from above, whirling in the spin gravity like soot. Eero still had spin gravity, but didn't have gravity from the massive acceleration it was under. Miller chose not to try to figure that out. A flock of softball-sized spider-like things crawled through the corridor, leaving a slick sheen of glowing slime behind them. It wasn't until he paused to knock one off the cart that he recognized them as severed hands, the trailing wrist bones charred black and remade. Part of his mind was screaming, but it was a distant one, and easy to ignore. He had to respect the protomolecule. For something that had been expecting prokaryotic anaerobes, it was doing a bang-up job of making do. He paused to check his suit sensor array. The temperature had risen 0.5 degree since he'd left the casino, and 0.1 degree since he'd entered this particular main hall. The background radiation was also climbing, his poor, abused flesh sucking in more rads. The concentration of benzene was going down, and his suit was picking up more exotic, aromatic molecules. Tetracene, anthracene, naphthalene, with behavior sufficiently strange to confuse the sensors. So it was the right direction. He leaned forward, the cart resisting his pull like a bored kid. As he recalled, the structural layout was roughly like Ceres's, and he knew Ceres like he knew his name. One more level up, maybe 2, there would be a confluence of services from the lower high-G levels and the supply and energy systems that did better at lower gravity. It seemed as likely a place to grow a command and control center as any, as good a location for a brain. "Gone and gone and gone," Eero said, "and gone." It was funny, he thought, how the ruins of the past shaped everything that came after. It seemed to work on all levels, one of the truths of the universe. Back in the ancient days, when humanity still lived entirely down a well, The paths laid down by Roman legions had become asphalt, and later ferro-concrete, without ever changing a curve or a turn. On Ceres, Eros, Tycho, the bore of the standard corridor had been determined by mining tools built to accommodate the trucks and lifts of Earth, which had in turn been designed to go down tracks wide enough for a mule cart's axle. And now the alien, the thing from out in the vast dark, was growing along the corridors, ducts, tube routes, and water pipes laid out by a handful of ambitious primates. He wondered what it would have been like if the protomolecule hadn't been captured by Saturn, had actually found its way into the soup of primordial Earth. No fusion reactors, no navigation drives, no complex flesh to appropriate. What would it have done differently if it hadn't had to build around some other evolution's design choices? "Miller," Julie said, "keep moving." He blinked. He was standing in the empty passageway at the base of an access ramp. He didn't know how long he'd been lost in his own mind. Years, maybe. He blew out a long breath and started up the ramp. The corridors above him were reading as considerably hotter than ambient, almost 3 degrees. He was getting close. There was no light, though. He took his tingling, half-numb thumb off the select button, turned on the hand terminal's little utility LED, and got back to the dead man switch just before the count of 4. Gone and gone and. The Eros feed squealed, a chorus of voices chattering in Russian and Hindi, clamoring over the old singular voice and being drowned out in turn by a deep, creaking howl. Whale song, maybe. Miller's suit mentioned politely that he had half an hour of oxygen left. He shut the alarm down. The transfer station was overgrown. Pale fronds swarmed along the corridors and twisted into ropes. Recognizable insects, flies, cockroaches, water spiders, crawled along the thick white cables in purposeful waves. Tendrils of something that looked like articulated bile swept back and forth, leaving a film of scurrying larvae. They were as much victim of the protomolecule as the human population. Poor bastards. "You can't take the razor back," Eros said, and its voice sounded almost triumphant. "You can't take the razor back. She is gone and gone and gone." The temperature was climbing faster now. It took him a few minutes to decide that Spinward might be slightly warmer. He hauled the cart. He could feel the squeaking, a tiny, rattling tremor in the bones of his hand. Between the mass of the bomb and the failing wheel bearings, his shoulders were starting to really ache. Good thing he wasn't going to have to haul this damn thing back down. Julie was waiting for him in the darkness. The thin beam from his hand terminal cut through her. Her hair floated, spin gravity having, after all, no effect on phantoms of the mind. Her expression was grave. "How does it know?" she asked. Miller paused. Every now and then, all through his career, some daydreamed witness would say something, use some phrase, laugh at the wrong thing, and he'd know that the back of his mind had a new angle on the case. This was that moment. "You can't take the razor back," Eros crowed. "The comet that took the protomolecule into the solar system in the first place was a dead drop, not a ship," Julie said, her dark lips never moving. "It was just ballistic. Any ice bullet with a protomolecule in deep freeze. It was aimed at Earth, but it missed and got grabbed by Saturn instead. The payload didn't steer it, didn't drive it, didn't navigate."
"It didn't need to," Miller said.
"It's navigating now. It's going to Earth. How does it know to go to Earth? Where did that information come from? It's talking. Where did that grammar come from? Who is the voice of Eros?" Miller closed his eyes. His suit mentioned that he only had 20 minutes of air. You can't take the razor back. She is gone and gone and gone.
Oh, fuck, Miller said. Oh, Jesus.
He let go of the cart, turning back toward the ramp and the light and the wide station corridors. Everything was shaking, the station itself trembling, like someone on the edge of hypothermia. Only, of course, it wasn't. The only one shaking was him. It was all in the voice of Eros. It had been there all the time. He should have known. Maybe he had. The proto-molecule didn't know English, or Hindi, or Russian, or any of the languages it had been spouting. All of that had been in the minds and softwares of Eros' dead, coded in the neurons and grammar programs that the proto-molecule had eaten. Eaten, but not destroyed. It had kept the information and languages and complex cognitive structures, building itself on them, like asphalt over the roads the legions built. The dead of Eros weren't dead. Juliet Andromeda Mao was alive. He was grinning so hard his cheeks ached. With one gloved hand, he tried the connection. The signal was too weak. He couldn't get through. He told his uplink on the surface ship to crank up the power. Got a connection. Holden's voice came over the link.
Hey, Miller. How you doing?
The words were soft, apologetic. A hospice worker being gentle to the dying. An incandescent spark of annoyance lit his mind, but he kept his voice steady.
Holden, he said. We have a problem.